I'm standing at the crossroads of Hepscott Road and White Post Lane. The newly built bagel factory stands behind me. I'm looking across the road to the Lord Napier pub. It has graffiti over most of the building, faces of monkeys above the pub's name, and a figure with a square yellow head on the connecting building. There is a wasteland behind a brick wall, and I can hear the hum of construction. The fences and walls of older buildings in the area are covered in graffiti and street art. This site, the Lord Napier pub, has existed in Hackney Wick for over 100 years. There's been a public house here since 1867. Imagine barred windows, boarded up doorways. The pub lay derelict for 24 years and became a site of graffiti and illegal raves in the 1990s and early 2000s. At the time, Hackney Wick was characterised by empty industrial buildings and very little domestic housing. The disused space played a significant part in the rave and graffiti scene here. This building later became symbolic of the gentrification of Hackney Wick. Graffiti emerged during the 1980s in New York, mainly on subway carriages. But the practice of tagging and mark-making on walls stretches much further back. Originally characterized by stylized text, today the broader discipline of street art includes pictorial representations as well as stenciling and collage. Its emergence as a form of outsider art, artwork by untrained practitioners, aligns it with other forms of folk art, but one that responds to the urban environment using purely modern methods. The outer walls of the Lord Napier were an integral part of the graffiti scene around Hackney Wick, expressing opinions that reflected public feeling about the development of the local area, shithouse to penthouse. Today the pub controls the graffiti on the facade, but other areas still change almost daily, often responding to local and global issues. What do the walls around you say? Economic decline in manufacturing industries during the 80s and 90s saw derelict spaces in the area also become locations for illegal raves and gatherings. Rave culture is characterized by its music, repetitive electronic bass and drums. Its roots stem from the house music of fallen industrialized cities in North America, such as Detroit and Chicago, along with self-built sound systems from Jamaica. Jamie Brett, creative director of the Museum of Youth Culture, describes:
rave culture transcends fashions, styles, and subculture. It embeds itself within the city's fabric, leaving ghosts behind. UK rave in particular taps into a global heritage, connections to colonial trade routes and the underground industrial vestiges of the past, deeply connected to a time of industrial decline both here in the UK and stateside, yet speaks to our digital futures. Despite its pre-1988 genealogy and current state of techno-globalism, it was specifically the UK rave scene of the late 80s and early 90s that fueled the tsunami of electronic dance music that soon swept the world from acid house to techno, jungle, garage and drum and bass. During this period, the United Kingdom ingested a burst of cultural, economic and technological amphetamine, leaving the population wired. The nearby Regent's Canal, once a trade route for colonial trade, disseminated new ideas and sound into the nation, from London Docklands into the north of the country via major cities like Leicester and Birmingham. Record pressings from Jamaica first brought the sounds of early percussive folk music like mento and ska from the Caribbean into record shops and British homes. It's the Jamaican invention of the amplification of bass that led to the sound system culture, which cradled the undulating bass of soul, house, techno and jungle to come decades later and sweeping dance floors across the nation.
The folkloric practices of rave and graffiti were never limited to this building, but nevertheless its history is symbolic of the area's development, creative expression and protest.